Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, all of my Blog Talk family. This is Candy Jeter, also known as Single Mama Diva. I am here to present to you a wonderful show today about sex and teens and how to talk with our children about sex. Or it doesn't necessarily have to be our children. It could be kids in the community, a child that you may run across that seems to need a little extra guidance. However, it seems that this topic, as much as we talk about it and as much as it is thrown up in our face, that we tend to forget how to communicate when it comes to this subject. So I've invited a few people to call in and share their expert opinions with us about the topic. And before I actually introduce them in, I just wanted to go over a few surveys that I happened to run across with the news and on Google. And it was a survey to parents about parents who overestimate their role in their teens' sex education. More than 40% of all parents surveyed thought that their teens were getting more information from home, whereas when the teens responded, the teens said that they were not. So it's always some type of discrepancy between the teens and the parents or the kids and the parents as to where this information is coming from. And I think one of the things that parents do know is that it can only come from them, but they find it hard to discuss it. Three-quarters of all parents in this particular study said that they strongly agree with the statement that teen sex is a scary thing, while only one-third of the teens believe that. Again, more parents believe it's scary than the actual teen, so it seems that it's more of a problem from what I've gathered, not just from this particular survey, but from just looking around, that the parents are more afraid of talking about sex than the children are. And I think when you look at it that way, then it lets the parents know that they have more work to do in the area of communication rather than putting it all on the teen. And also the study showed that a lot of these teens are getting messages from their friends. And that's just one of the three studies or articles that I'll bring up during the show. So I guess we're ready to get started. I'm going to bring on my guest. And I usually let the guests introduce themselves a little bit. And so I'm going to let them come on and tell you who they are. Hello.
Oh, hi, Candy. This is Susan.
Excuse me?
Hi, this is Susan Candy.
Hi, Susan. How are you? Your phone is breaking up just a little bit, but I can hear you now.
Oh, you made it. Yes. Well, if it continues to break up, let me know and I can switch to another phone here. Is this still a problem?
It's okay. It's just a little staticky, but it's not bad. I can understand you. How are you?
Okay.
I finally get to really
talk
with you. Yeah, Susan and I have been emailing back and forth. I have a Single Mama Diva group here in Cleveland, Ohio, where it's about 30 of us, and we actually meet up. And I posted it on Craigslist, and Susan had contacted me. And Susan is really passionate about empowering moms to strengthen their families. And she's actually the founder of The Confident Mom and incorporates her training as a PCI, which is a certified parent coach, and a certified family manager coach to help moms gain clarity, control, and confidence in their parenting. That sounds like a lot, Susan. Are you really busy, or is it just more busy on paper, or what's going on with you?
Well, that's funny how you put it that way. But, well, of course, all moms are busy. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, if you have another thing that takes you, you know, outside your family life. But we're all lead crazy lives. But, you know, when you have a passion and are able to share that and help other moms grow, you know, that's what feeds me and keeps me going to be there for my family. So, so yeah, very busy, but busy in a good way, too.
Mm-hmm. And your kids are 16, 12, and 8.
Yeah, so I loved that this particular topic was one that you approached me with because I think that it is such, you know, such a topic that is, it's scary. Parents don't know what to say. They don't know how to say it. And I definitely have probably taken a completely different approach with my kids. And so far, you know, it's been great. You know, not that my approach will work for everyone, but I think, you know, the bottom line is that you set the stage for how your kids are going to receive information about, you know, sex and, you know, their reaction is going to mimic what your reaction is. So to set that stage is so important.
Exactly, exactly. That's one of the points that I want us to bring out here about how important it is for us to realize the verbal and nonverbal cues that we give off that influence our kids' ideas about sex in the first place, because we're their first teachers, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. That's where, well, at least you hope you are. I mean, you know, there are some families that perhaps that's not the case. But, I mean, that's what God had in mind by giving you these children. And you are the teacher, and you are there to mold them and give them the right direction. So, yeah, I would hope that most people would see that as a huge calling, that where their children learn about sex and how to receive that information, yeah, it does come from the home.
Well, I find that this is a global topic now. Actually, we're talking about something that's global. And that's why I'm pleased to be able to have on a guest also, Susan from the UK, and her name is Tola. And she is a very active parent as well and active in her community. And I'm going to bring her on so we can have a global chat because she's calling from another time zone. I think it's 5 o'clock where she is. So, hi, Tola, are you there?
Hi, Candy. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. I have Susan on the line. I don't know if you were able to hear.
Yeah, I heard
what Susan. Okay. Well, I want you to just tell us a bit about what you do as well.
how many do I do? I do a lot to do with parenting. I have like a parenting network, which you're a member of.
Mm-hmm.
I also write parenting articles for one of our local newspapers over here in the UK. I do have a parenting talk show, which airs on Tuesdays. And I also have a youth talk show as well, which airs on Tuesday also. And then I do a lot of seminar workshops to do with parents, children, you know, parents, and it's for single parents, married, I mean, couples as well, anything to do with parenting, because that's what I'm just passionate about. I sleep parenting and I wake parenting.
Yeah, you both seem really dedicated, and I think that's why you guys stuck out to me, because I've seen a lot of parent advocates. And it's kind of mixed with a little bit of entertainment, and I guess that's good to a degree, but after watching so many reality shows and a lot of serious topics being made funny and light and never really getting to the depth of issues, I wanted to get a few people who were really serious, yet not too serious, that you can't just talk about anything, to kind of bring this topic home so that maybe we can begin to help parents feel a little bit comfortable. Now, I'm just going to ask each of you, this is not a planned question, and I, I had a few questions planned, maybe two or three, but most of the questions are going to come as we kind of talk here. What were your, and I'm going to ask specifically, your mother's influences, negative or positive, on your views about sex, and what do you think helped or hindered your ability to be able to talk about sex today with your own children?
Susan.
Why don't you go ahead and start, Paula? I've talked too much already, so we can we can hear from you first if you'd like.
Okay. I think for me, I'm going to answer that question from my dad's influence, because I grew up with my dad.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so in terms of, we never had the sex talk in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no talk of sex whatsoever. I mean, the little knowledge that I did have came from school, the little that they teach in sex education. So I found, for me, getting pregnant at 16, I wasn't even aware that I was actually pregnant. A little bit of what they taught us in school was that when you start your period, sometimes as you start, it can alter. So it might not be consistent to begin with. You might start and then you might miss a month or two and then it comes back, that kind of thing. So I found that when I fell pregnant, I didn't know, because I thought it must be my period messing about.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other talk about sex in my home. My parents just didn't do it. Maybe they think if they do it, you'll probably want to go out and actually have sex. But we didn't have a talk whatsoever in my home, and that's something that I am adamant that is not going to happen with my kids. So we have regular talks where I call them individually and I ask them questions. And it's not shocking or out of the blue to them, because they know that I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say, have you lost your virginity? Are you having sex? Are you sleeping with your girlfriend? I just ask them blatantly, because, you know, I feel that, you know, the more you know, the more you can educate them on. But if you act as though they're not doing it, they're not having it, then you won't say anything and they won't be knowledgeable in what they're doing, because I feel that I'll be in a better position to guide them if I know exactly what they're doing, what they're up to.
Right, right. That's very good, because I see that a lot, where either a parent grew up as you did and didn't have anyone to talk to about sex, sex never came up at all, or either there was some type of violation of sex, where sex was improperly introduced very early, and then you have the few where there is a balance where, you know, there's just general conversation and talk. So I'm going to pose the same question to Susan. And, Susan, you feel free to talk now.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about this part of the equation for a while. But I can remember my mom, she was the one to talk to me about sex, and this is going to date myself probably a little bit, but I can recall she had written away to the Tampax company, and they must have had some kind of promotion at that time where you got sent like a kit that was like, you know, here's how to talk to your daughter about sex, kit. And, you know, it had come in the mail, and it had, you know, paraphernalia, but basically just literature and pictures and that kind of stuff. And I can remember, you know, sitting and having this talk with my mom, and she, to me, she didn't seem embarrassed. She didn't seem hesitant or anything. And I would say it was probably when I was 12, if I recall correctly. So I think that kind of set the stage. I wouldn't say that, you know, there was a lot of open conversation. I don't think my dad and I ever even, you know, had the word sex in any kind of conversation, even to this day, probably. But so it set the stage, you know, that I could talk to my mom. But it was funny, because then the next part of this equation is I had a boyfriend in high school, and you know, just at that start of, you know, trying to do some experimenting. And my mom, I know she had to have been reading my diary, because she came to me and put me on the birth control pill, you know, before I even had sex. So, yeah. So, you know, it was. I mean, I look back and I'm so thankful, because, I mean, I could be at a completely different, you know, spot in my life due to, you know, not that, you know, it is the way it is and things happen. Like for Paulo, you know, you mentioned you had a child, you know, and got pregnant early, and you know, but the conversations now that I can see with how my mom handled that, you know, prevented that road for me anyway at that point in my life. So so I can see where that not being hesitant and just being open has definitely, you know, paved the way for how I deal with it in my own home. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I have a couple of callers that would like to say something. I'm going to every now and then interrupt and let the callers get involved here, and then we'll go back. Hold one moment. Bring them in. Hello?
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 Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
Oh, okay. This is BC, and you know, usually I'm have a show also where I chime into other individual show, and it's a good topic that they talk. I'm a single father.
Okay,
you know,
so glad to have you on, by the way. Nice to hear a male voice. Welcome.
Yeah, three kids, you know, two boys and a daughter, you know, for the last 15 years been raising my kids. And, you know, my thing is, I think we as some parents, you know, a lot of parents are so complacent. Also, I work in the school system. And, you know, this is 2009, you know. And it's not like 1950 or 1940. And I think parents do not get involved, you know, until it's too late. That is one thing I keep seeing over and over again, you know.
Right.
And when I say we get complacent, we think that just being in the home and talking to your kids, right, without the understanding that you don't go into the schools, you don't be visible in your kids' life, and then when something happens, you want to chastise them after the fact, not knowing that there's many individuals out there that giving them, you know, when you say don't do this, somebody and their peers are telling them, hey, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And most parents have to understand that when you're in the home, it's totally different than when you're sitting up in here running with your peers and you're seeing a different light than a confined in the home environment.
Right, right. So there's another side that parents are not aware of because they're not involved enough.
And that's what it is. You know, they're aware of it, but they're so complacent. You know, figure that, you know, I can tell my kids don't have sex. I can tell my kids everything else. But guess what? You know, the little boy and the little girl down the street, right, when the kids in school, they're seeing pregnancy. They're seeing young men and women holding hands and kissing and doing the different things that they're doing in the school environment. You know, and outside
now,
in the public.
How old are your kids?
I had my, you know, when my wife passed away 15 years ago, my daughter was three, two boys, five and nine. Now they're 23, 19, mm-hmm. and 17.
Okay.
You know,
congratulations. That's a huge job.
Well, thank you. You know, it's you know, it's just I learned from my grandmother and my parents, you know, the responsibility and taking care of your offspring and your family. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to continue listening, and if you have anything you want to add, just let me know. I think it's a feature on there. You can kind of click if you have something you want to say, and
okay.
I'll just chime you right on in, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
He made a great point, you know, which is so true, that parents, they become complacent. They think somebody else is going to take care of the issue for them. And that, you know, I think Paul and I can agree that that's a huge, huge mistake that is so often made.
Right. I know for me, my sisters were much older than I was. And my mom was very open about sex, but she was open with them because she was closer to them in age. It was my father and then it's three girls. So, of course, he had absolutely no say-so in talking to us about anything. Every now and then he would interject and say a couple of things here and there. But they were always male-coded, so we didn't really get it until we actually became adults. But she was very open with them, and because they were 10 and 12 years older than me, and between me eavesdropping on them and trying to imitate the things that they did, I would get myself in all kinds of, you know, trouble listening. And then finally, I think it was more of a trickle-down type thing where I was 11 when I got my period, so I wasn't shocked. I called my big sisters and was like, oh, I started my cycle. You know, I thought it was some big deal. I thought I was in the club with them because I wanted to be so close to them. But my mom was always speaking very openly, but she made it so also that it was kind of like my decision. And I was always very afraid with the level of information that she gave me to go against that until I did get my first boyfriend and, you know, we started experimenting and things. And then when we finally decided to have sex, she kind of looked at me and she said, after all of the years of talking, she said, well, just so you know, you're not the only one. And it was very cruel, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm in love. I think I'm going to marry him. I think this is going to be the love of my life. And actually he was. I mean, you know, we're still really tight as friends today, but I don't regret it or anything like that. It wasn't a bad relationship. But what she was speaking of is that, you know, girls and guys are in two totally different places when they're young. And we're in two totally different places a lot of times, even when we get older. And I think the hard thing is not necessarily talking to them, but talking to each sex as it pertains to them. Because I have a girl and a boy, and I know my daughter's sex comes up all the time because she's always noticing who's kissing, who's talking. She's talking about who's going with who at school and what is this and what is that. And she's just a ball of energy and words and expression. Whereas my son, I kind of have to pull it out of him, and it's a lot of one-word answers, and yeah, no, maybe, I don't know. And I think when it comes to that, it's more of, okay, how do you get past the gender communication issues? And I'm going to throw that out there for either one of you to answer that question as well.
When I recently did a show on teenage pregnancy, I came across some information, and it was saying that parents actually send out, when it comes to the sex talk, they send out one message to the boys and a different one to the girls. But it was kind of like stated that the girls felt that the boys got more of it than the girls did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, when it comes to gender, one thing that I have noticed is that parents are more, they don't so much do the sex talk with the girls. They try and do more of the setting boundaries with them, keeping them at home, trying to make them not go out too often. Whereas with the boys, they're a lot freer to go out. They're a lot freer to do things, hang with friends, because it's the girls that they try to protect from becoming pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And for the boys, it's a bit okay for them to have more freedom, we can call it, than the girls. But I think when it comes to actually delivering the sex talk, like you said, the genders, as genders, we are different. And it's a different message that I give to my son that I would give to my daughter, because the genders are different, and we have to remember when it comes to sex, men are releasing, women are receiving a deposit. So the message has to differ anyway, because it's different. The act is different anyway.
Right.
But I find that, like the gentleman said as well, if you don't, you can talk, but if you don't understand what you're talking about, it's going to be very hard to get a message across. either gender if you don't know how to talk about it. And I think the problem is a lot of parents, because the sex talk is a taboo to a lot of parents. It's not something that sits comfortably with them to talk about. Some of them are actually embarrassed to talk about it, so they actually avoid doing the sex talk, hoping that sex education in school will cover it, or they'll learn it along the way. It's something they'll learn as they grow, which they don't. They might pick up habits, but sometimes they'll pick up, you know, bad habits. There's good habits, there's bad habits. So we might pick up information that is not so good for us. But I think the problem is a lot of parents find is they don't know how to talk about it. And that is mm-hmm. where a lot of parents actually need the help. How do I even start talking about the sex talk? What age should they start talking about it? And how do I talk about it to a boy? How do I talk about it to a girl?
Right.
Because we all know about it and we all see it out there, but we all think, well, it's happening out there. It's not going to happen here for some time. And time is passing by. The children are getting older and older, and before you know it, something's happened.
Susan, do you have any thoughts about gender communication when it comes to sex?
Well, I think one of the parts that often, I guess, is missing when parents do step out and talk about sex with their kids is kind of, you know, it's all on the physical action and, you know, the repercussions of, you know, if you have sex, this could happen, and this is, you know, the mechanics or whatever. But I think one part that often isn't discussed or talked about is the whole part of, you know, having respect for yourself and respect for your body, and that it is a choice, and being able to, you know, draw that into the conversation with your children as they grow up. I think, you know, hopefully will, at least from my experience, tends to have an impact in, one, how you communicate and the honesty that develops between you and your children, because it's not entirely centered around this, quote, act that, you know, is kind of so embarrassing to talk about for teens. You know, there's another element to the conversation, I think, that, you know, that ends up opening more communication. At least that's been from my experience. So maybe I'm not the norm. but I can say that when I'm able to talk to my son and my daughter about different, questions and starting conversations with them, oftentimes, you know, we end up coming roundabout to that basic thing of, you know, and my kids will surprise me by answering questions better than I could have on why they've chosen not to go down that road yet, or perhaps a comment regarding another person's choice, you know, and which kind of just reinforces the fact of the conversations that I've had with them along the road. And I think, Polly, you mentioned about the different ages and stages, and where do you start and what do you say? And, you know, I think it's going to be different for every family and what's comfortable for them. But, you know, I think starting out young and not giving those silly stories about the baby comes from the stork and, you know, all of these different things that happen, and then you end up having to go back and change what you've been saying because it hasn't really been the way it is, or using different terms for the anatomy that are, you know, the goofy little terms. You know, just start out from the beginning giving just enough information to satisfy the question, but satisfying it in an honest way, not, you know, the baby grows in the stomach. I mean, it seems so trivial, but, you know, that's where the trust and that communication, you know, all of that starts developing with your kids. When you've given them the 411 from the beginning and you haven't had to change your story, they're going to be more likely to come and they're going to believe what you have to say because they know you're not trying to hide it or, you know, be secretive or, you know, change your story halfway through, I guess.
Right. Well, I have another caller on, and caller, I want you to hang on, don't hang up, because I know whenever I call into a show, I want to speak, and I don't like being ignored. I don't know about you guys, but I love to be able to enjoy the conversation. So, caller, I just want you to know that I see you. But I think for parents, the message that I would like to send out to parents is that sex is never about sex. And a lot of the times we look at sex and we've been told that it's dirty and it's ugly and it's this and it's you know, that, and when in actuality it's just one of our basic needs. And a lot of the times when kids or adults have sex, they use sex as a platform for rebelliousness for any particular reason, or maybe a lack of confidence, or maybe they're angry. It's the most basic need, but yet it produces the most serious consequences a lot of the time. And also, I feel like the best way to actually tackle an issue that we've given so much power is to actually suck the power out of it by not attaching so much to it. It's a very sacred thing, but at the same time, people use sex for power, power struggles. Well, my mom said I can't do this, I'm going to show her, or, you know, I can't run the fastest, but I know I can, you know, have sex the best. Or even as adults, you know, mom may be mad at dad, or dad may have left the family for some reason, and maybe the kids can see mom using sex as a means to get back at dad. And even on television, when you look at soap operas and things like that, sex is used as manipulation, it's used to lure, to lie. It's used to do a lot of things other than share meaningful expression. And I think more than what's right and what's wrong, we have to be able to learn the lessons that we get from our intimate relationships, whether they be sexual or non-sexual. And I think that, like I heard both of you say, instilling some type of sense of self and pride, because a lot of young people go out and have sex to learn about themselves. Well, who am I? What do I like? You know, what's going on? A lot of young kids are numb. They don't. And I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but I noticed that when kids are young, they know exactly what they want to do. I want to be a nurse. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a police officer. I want to heal the sick. I want to raise the dead. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. They're so passionate. By the time their hormones start kicking in and you start asking them, well, what do you want to do? And you, somewhere along the line, you're looking for this same enthusiasm and these, you know, on-the-dot answers, and they just start shrugging their shoulders. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. 2 years ago, you wanted to be an actor or a singer or a doctor or a lawyer. What happened? Well, this is around the time that the media starts feeding the kids things about who they are and what they want and what they want to do and what they want to be. And we have to also talk about the narcissism that's in the media now. It's all about me. And we do know that sex has now been turned into an immediate gratification. If I can't get what I want in 5 years, I know sex will bring me what I want today. I want love. I'm going to go out here and have sex. I want money. I'm going to go out here and have sex. I want attention. I'm going to go out here and have sex. So I'm going to let you guys comment on how we've attached everything that does not need to be, everything that sex is not, we've attached to it. And I'm going to let you guys think about that as I take this caller and find out how can we really just bring the naturalness of sex, looking at at nature and see how nature uses sex. They don't bastardize it. No, it's not, might not be a lot of feeling and high cognitive thinking, but you don't see a whole lot of the abuse in nature that we see in human nature. Among the animals, they even respect sex more than humans do. So we're going to talk about a little bit about that after I take this call. One moment. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's me again. I think we dropped off on the call just a little while ago when I had to call back in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The only thing that I have to say, you know, I think what happened, you know, some of us are, you know, kids nowadays are way more advanced than kids back then, and we sell them short, you know, and I see that all the time. Because the comment was made in the difference of how you speak to a young lady and a little boy. You know, and for me personally, there's no difference, right? All my kids sit up here, boys and girls. You have to attack them the same way. You can't, and that's what's happening to us. You know, we isolating, you know, boys from girls.
And
that should never happen. And we are, you know, yes, our mother taught us certain things, our grandmother taught us certain things, but this is a new era. And, you know, I've been fortunate to travel different parts of the world. And the world is light years ahead of the United States as far as that is concerned, as far as the intimacy, as far as sexually and everything else, right? And especially with kids, you know. And so we have to attack the problem, right, as a whole and not part of the whole. And that's one of our major problems. That's why, you know, we have this separation, you know, and you talk to your daughter one way, then you talk to your son another way, then your daughter have to wash dishes, your son can't wash, and so on and so forth. No, you know, in my house, everybody clean the house, clean the bathroom, wash the dishes,
that's
wash clothes, and so on and so forth. You cannot
sit
up here. Otherwise, we know what we have done the same thing our parents done and separate us, and that's why we have a problem to this day in just the little thing in talking about sex.
Right. I agree with you totally on that. Yeah, that creates more of the gender communication gap that I was saying, and I think what it is that the girls are more prompted to talk about sex when it comes to different things, and other things motivate guys to have sex. And I think when we talk together and let the girls know, you know, what guys are thinking, and guys let girls know what they're thinking, kind of bridge that communication gap, that is really important to make sure that that happens, because that follows us throughout our adulthood, you know, when you're talking about man and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend, or however that works. But I want a little more tagged on how do we make sex not such a big deal when the media is making it this huge thing. It's really not that big of a deal, and it's one of those things that has been blown up. So if any of you, other than just talking about it, we cover our kids' eyes, we cover their ears, yeah, definitely monitor what they do. But I've noticed there's an increase in whatever we don't want them to do, anything that you may, no, you will not marry that boy. Don't you ever bring him back to this house again. She's often married, you know. So creating the balance. Between and sir, what did you say your name was again?
My name is Noel. They usually call me BC in the different chat rooms and so on and so forth.
You said BC, B
yes,
as in
ma'am.
Boy. Okay, I'll call you that.
Yes, ma'am, and that's what it is. But before I start listening, you know, I always, you know, when we say about the media, you know, we have to look at ourselves, because who runs our household? Who controls, you know, our household and our kids? You know, and what happened, you're right. You know, I'm sitting up here, I have, you know, and like I said, I have two kids in college, right? One getting ready to graduate. The thing is, I'm, you know, still yet today, when my son walk into the house, right, you know, it's certain things that he does, right, that he knows I don't put up with, right? They can watch anything on the TV that they want. I do not sit up here and say, you can't watch this, you can't watch that, and so on and so forth. They are teenagers, right? But what I do, we sit down and we differentiate. We sit up and say, you know what, look at that. That is trash.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying? That's not the way to go, you know. Then they know. But when we sit up here and say, turn the TV off, guess what? When they go to a friend's house, they are watching the things that you just told them not to watch.
right. I agree. What do you girls think about that? Ladies, rather. We're talking about kids. I'm talking about girls. So how do you guys feel about that?
For me, I like what BC just said in terms of that he does not just turn off the TV and say you can't watch that, but they sit down and discuss, because I find with a lot of children, when you tell them they can't do something or they can't have, what it does is it now creates a curiosity.
Right.
But when you actually expose them to certain things, the curiosity is now killed, you know, because they now know what it's about. They see for themselves. You can sit down and watch a program and say, now what was the essence of that?
Mm-hmm.
What message came across? And then they think, yeah, it's true. I did watch that, and it didn't say anything to me. But when you're saying, don't watch it, they're thinking, why shouldn't I watch it? What is there in that I shouldn't be seeing? Is there, you know, it creates a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the friend's house, like you said, and they'll watch it just to see
mm-hmm.
what it was.
Right.
And I think it's like that with a lot of things. You know, I had a friend of mine. She said that she let her granddaughter sip wine. She said, I don't have a problem with that. She said, because if I keep telling her, no, you can't, the curiosity will be there, and I don't want her to go behind my back to try and sneak and take it. But now that she's had it, she sees how disgusting it is, she won't ask for it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we stop our children from things. They don't know why. They don't know why we've done it. They don't know why we're saying certain things, and we haven't taken time to sit down and explain it so that curiosity is actually now quashed, and they see for themselves that, you know what, that is why. Because I always say to people, if you're going to say something to your child, don't do, explain to them why you don't want them to do it. It's not just enough to say don't do it, because they'll start to ask themselves, why can't I do it? If all their friends are doing it and they can't do it, they'll wonder why. What is wrong with doing it? But all my friends are. But when you sit down and you take time, and then they can see for themselves, yeah, well, I understand now what my parent is saying, why I shouldn't do this. It, you know, it kind of helps them to understand, and we want to get our children to the point of understanding why things. Like you said, the media's message is sex sells. But
right.
Then we help our children to understand, no, it doesn't. But if we just say to them, no, it does not, that's it. They'll wonder why. Why is one person saying it does, and why is the other person saying it doesn't? But if we help them to understand, no, it actually does not. You know, they'll have more of an understanding.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think Paula makes some, you know, really good points. And, you know, one of the best things, too, what PC brought up is, you know, sitting down and having these conversations in these shows with your kids and coming up with some kind of, you know, I guess for a better word, conclusion to the end of some kind of show you're watching after having some kind of conversation, rather than it's just floating out there and then they're kind of lost to have their own thoughts regarding it. They're not getting any input other than what is coming across on that screen, which basically has reduced sex to just what you're saying, Candy, you know, power, and that women, this is the only way that they can obtain any kind of power or have control is by offering themselves in that way. So, you know, it's interesting. I started watching, you know, a primetime television show probably about 5 or 6 years ago, really enjoyed it, and I noticed each season it just got worse and raunchier, and there was no sense to who was hooking up with who and sleeping with who. And then finally, you know, and this was a show that I had watched with my kids, and finally, we are a divorced house, so they're with their dad part of the time. So the one time they came back to my house and were expecting to watch this particular show, and I said, you know what, I've decided I'm not going to watch the show anymore because I don't understand what the show's really about anymore, because every week somebody new is sleeping with somebody else, and I don't really care to watch all that. And so it just opened up a completely different, I guess, conversation, and for them to understand why I've chosen, rather than me telling them, you can't watch it, it was more, this is why I've chosen not to watch it. I didn't tell them that they couldn't watch it here or whatever, but it just gave a different perspective into the conversation and gave them kind of food for thought. So.
Right. Now, I have another caller on, and I'm going to cue the caller in after I make a statement about the media. I am a big black and white movie fan, so I was watching a black and white film. Normally I can remember them, but I couldn't remember this particular one, and it had a very provocative storyline. It was a 1939 film where the father wanted to date his son's girlfriend, and of course the father's married to the son's mom, and they're a happy family, but he sees this young girl who's maybe about 20 years younger than he is, and he comes on to the girl and everything, and the girl and the son is madly in love with this girl. They were able to pull off all of these plots, and they had these little innuendos and little things in there that were going on. And I was looking at the creativity and how they pulled that plot off. There was no nudity. No one was kissing. No one was doing anything, really. And it's just, your kids could sit there and watch the same show. If they couldn't get it the way that it was written in, they would never really get it. So if your kids happen to be in the room, you're able to kind of enjoy a real adult film, and the kids not even really know exactly what's going on until maybe they get of age and look back on the movie and say, wow. And I just look at how much creativity that takes and how thoughtful movies were in those days to try and actually give adult entertainment without necessarily X-ing out kids or, you know, things like that. And I was just looking at how now, and I couldn't peel myself away from the TV, whereas now the way things are written, you can go downstairs, you can cook dinner, and you can come back up, and you can just about tell what's going on and how it's going, and you can just kind of hear what's going on, and it's so brash and kind of in your face. And I was just using that to show how we've even lost creativity when it comes to how we present things today. So I'm going to go to the caller. Hello. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, well, good. Thank you for having this forum for this conversation to happen. I just wanted to share that I really appreciate it what Susan was sharing about how things are different for every family and how important it is, because even though we talked about how it's not about sex and how the kids are out there getting all this information, I think that's so important. But I think one of the things she was speaking to that I, at least the way I interpret it, is that you have to figure out a way to negotiate your values versus the information that you're giving to them as well. It's not just about them having the information, but the interpretation, because depending on what age group there are, they're going to interpret the information different. And what she was saying about sitting with your kids and explaining what you want them to get out of what they're watching, I think that was really powerful, because otherwise they're just getting the information. We don't know what they're making out of the information.
Right. Exactly. So putting the information in on top of family values, you're saying, has more power than still not. This, I guess this goes back in with sex education in the school. If you're not talking about it at home, if your kids don't have a sense of value and pride within themselves, you can send them to school and sex education won't do them any good. I don't happen to be a big fan of sex education in the school. I know that's getting political, but I just don't agree with it. I just kind of feel like every school has their own agenda, and anything past the reproductive system, how babies are made, I really don't necessarily want my kids being taught advanced sex education, I guess, so to speak, because they're getting really advanced now. They call themselves following what the kids are doing, but at the same time, I think that putting it in the school system, maybe making it a side program that parents can go to at the library, and maybe, you know, we're having a once-a-month seminar, and parents and kids come and join us in the library. But if I'm not there to actually see what's going on, if I'm at work, I really don't want my child getting sex education in the schools because I don't necessarily agree with everything that's being taught. You know, I guess it goes back to the same thing as whether you teach, you know, creation or evolution or whatever. I think that that has a long way to go because this right here, this era here is moving so fast and kids are becoming so advanced that the school call themselves keeping up with the children, and they are actually going ahead of a lot of children. We're under the assumption because we see these things happening in the media that all of these kids are wild and crazy and they're doing all these things. But really it's a very small portion of kids that's out here acting wild and crazy about sex. And then you have this large pool of kids who may not even be thinking about sex, who are exposed to advanced levels of sex education. And I just want to know how you guys feel about that.
I think you make a good point. I would say that I'm probably not a big fan of the sex education and being in the school for the same reason. I mean, I think what you say is it is a smaller percentage of, you know, the teenage population that is out there, you know, whooping it up and making such a, you know, a place for the media to grab a hold of this and make it even more exorbitant than it is. But it's almost like the same kind of thing of the curiosity thing. If you tell them no, you know, then, you know, they're going to want it even more. But on the other hand, I feel kind of like if this is something that's continually brought in front of their face in a school environment and around their peers, it's almost kind of like the same way. Well, maybe I'm missing something because I'm not, you know, and I get conversations from other people, you know, who are, and, you know, so then it feeds in something else. You know, I don't know that that's very productive.
Right. I have a clip here, a news clip of another survey that was actually taken in Malaysia, because as I said, this is a global thing going on, and Malaysia does not have sex education as of when this article was written yet legislated in their schools, and they said that their percentages were lower in sex. With teens having sex than in the U.S. I hear that a lot where, so that kind of, I guess, debunks the theory that, oh, if we just, you know, put it in the schools and put it in the, you know, put it all over the place that kids are not going to do it. They've actually relegated talking about sex more in the home. I mean, you know, that's what they are promoting is talking about sex more in the home because they feel that it's more of a, you have more control. So I don't know. Go ahead.
I work for the public school system, and I have sat in with fifth and sixth graders that parents are approved to look at these videos of sex education. And sometimes, contrary to what people think, unless they look at it and they see what's going on, because when, you know, I was in the school, you know, from the time my kids were in elementary school, constantly, okay, up till high school, I'm always in the school system, and, you know, culture plays a large part, right?
Right.
Now,
right.
You know, most of the time, and I'll tell you, most of the time with African American kids, right, when they sit up here and have sex, they have sex unprotected. Most of the white kids, they have sex, but they have sex protected. Okay, but they're having sex. They haven't. And if you really canvass the school, you will be amazed and see what goes on, right, with all the kids in the school, not just the black kids, you know, but white kids and every other kids. They're out there at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning doing what they need to do. But, you know, I think what happened, we really need to take a look at our society, right, as parents, you know, and we can't look at the TV, you know, because, like I said, I'm a single father, and, you know, my daughter came to me when she first had a period. You understand? Came to me, nobody else, you know, and men, as We have women always talking about this, but we don't bring in the men, you know, or the men don't want to come, right?
Right.
And that's what needs to happen, right? As long as our society is so divided, right, our young boys and girls will be divided just like the parents are divided, and that's why we wouldn't be able to get over the hump. But as long as we come together and you can see two parents talking about this thing, engaging in effective dialogue, it will change. But as long as we stay the same and women talking about sex and the man just sitting up in here, right, and you can't go to the store and buy
right,
some stuff for you. You know, my sons, if my daughter's sitting up in here and my son go out and she asks them to bring something home, guess what? They will bring something home because I already taught him that. You know, she came to me. I don't mind sitting up in here and going and buying it for my daughter and so on and so forth. There's nothing big in this family. You see what I'm saying?
Well, what about this? Like I said, sex is never just about sex. Now we're about 20-plus years into this age of maybe 30 more. I'll say about 30 years, 35, of teachers can't discipline the kids. They can't discipline the kids. Now, I needed to ask you, Susan, because you also have some things that you're involved in on how to discipline without screaming and how to discipline, I guess, without corporal punishment and things like that. Okay, now when I was in school, of course, we got paddled. And my mother never had to stand over me to see whether I was doing my homework, because I knew when I got to school my teachers were going to take care of that if I showed up without my homework. And my teachers were not going to take time out to call my mom because the teachers were in control of the classroom. This made the teachers more dedicated and really established more of a relationship with the child, because no one was the buffer in between there. My mom knew that the teachers knew what they were doing, and my teachers knew that my mom had already given the nonverbal okay, do what you have to do, if Candy does not do what she's supposed to do. So that made the teacher feel even more responsible. Oh, wow, I have this huge responsibility for this child. This parent, my mother and father, they're expecting me to produce results with their child. And so when I came home, there was no work that I didn't understand. My parents didn't have to sit down with me for 2 and 3 hours to help me with math, because my teachers made sure that we all understood what we were to do before we went home. If we did not understand, we were actually staying after school. All right? If the teachers found us in the bathroom, oh, we got our asses beat, and it wasn't bad, but we got to see kids sometimes get in this little trance, and sometimes a little tap here and there kind of takes us out, and we actually were like, oh, wow, we're not supposed to do that. Wouldn't catch us in the bathrooms again, you know, if your pants were down and you're touching or you're doing this thing. It was so controlled, and it was no abuse, and it was love, and it was caring, and it was a lot of respect there. Okay, now here comes the government. You can't fuss at the child. You can't punish the child. You can't set up natural consequences. You know, if you don't come to school dressed correctly, you turn yourself around and go back home. Then you come back, and when you're dressed correctly, you sit down. And if you, the class that you missed, whoever's class you missed because you had to go home and change clothes, you got in trouble for that. So we're missing natural consequences, we're missing parent-teacher relationships, and the zeal for teaching is completely gone because they're supervisors if they don't know how to teach. And the parents and teachers are feeling like, well, my goodness, if I can't tell Johnny that this particular consequence is going to take place if he doesn't do his homework, or if he's caught in the bathroom having sex, or if he's caught in the bathroom smoking or drinking, then all of a sudden, the kids are out of control. Now the kids have the problem, and the adults are standing back as though it's the children's fault. So how do you navigate in a society where you can't touch the kids, you can barely look at them?
But who said that, though?
The government.
No, we can't.
The administration. Administration sets up a lot of stuff because I know that parents have a lot to say about that. But at the same time, we still have to look at the fact that they're still, if they get enough, if they kick up enough dust and people respond, then they kick up a little more dust, just like they're making a huge, they made a huge deal about Obama coming to the schools and talking and things like that, and it was just a big blow up. I think when children sense that everybody's not on one accord, it leaves too much room for manipulation of facts.
Who is responsible for each, you know, like for me personally, right? The government don't run my kids. The neighbors don't run my kids. The school don't run my kids. They're there for a service, right? And I have to be in the school. You know, I'm you know what I'm tired of is to go.
But do you go to jail if you discipline a child, or if you call a parent and say your kid was found in the bathroom and they were performing sex acts? And I mean, I'm just saying this as a hypothetical situation, but this happens a lot of the time. And the parent comes in, and there's no relationship there between the parent and the teacher and the parent and the student. But yet we want to put sex education in there. We want to talk to our kids about sex at home. But there's still a gap there.
But who called? My thing is, right, as a single father, right, as three young kids growing up, okay, we are too materialistic in this society, first and foremost, right?
Right.
I see people sit up here and as parents, right? I'm not saying teachers are not comparable also. But what happens, right, you can go to football games, you can go to basketball games, you can get off, right, and crowd it on a Friday night or Thursday night or whatever it is. But when report cards go home, when the teachers called you, right, to come and look at your kids, you're too busy. You understand? I left a good job, you know, when my wife passed away, to in order for me to sit up here, you know, and I would sweep the streets to ensure that I'm in the school, that they ensure when my kids come home, right, they will be there. You know, I'm not a rich individual. I'm poor as dirt, right? But right now, with two kids sitting up in here, one getting ready to graduate with a chemical engineering degree, the other one is a biology student, right, and my daughter wants to go into medicine. So I have to do that. There is no
exactly.
government. There is no neighbor. There is nobody else but me have to take responsibility. And if I sit up here, ask my kids, yes, I whoop their butt, right? And I dare them to sit up here and call some law on me.
I'm in total agreement. I think what I'm saying is the sense of kids still sense the sense of division. And if you know how kids do in a household, I guess when they see a mom and a dad not really communicating, ultimately all of the power comes from home. All of the influence comes from home. I mean, you know, initially, but then you have these other factors in there. So I want Susan to share some of her tips when it comes to communicating to kids rather than scaring them or screaming at them or doing the things that we used to do to scare them out of sex or to scare them out of any type of deviant behavior, whether it be sex or alcohol. What are some of the tips that you've given your kids and your parents about communicating in this new generation way where kids today are pretty much untouchable?
Well, it is interesting. One point, and I will answer that. One thing that I think which is so relevant and what BC is saying here is that I think he has made a perfect picture of having to sacrifice for his children. And, you know, you say you you are dirt poor. Oh, I disagree, because look at the riches that you have given your children. That, I mean, it's you. Your rewards wait for you. That's what I have to say.
Right.
But that's a word that parents now, they don't understand. Sacrificing, you know, they think, yeah, they could just keep going along, you know, doing whatever it is that they've decided is important in order, you know, to gain what they want, and then, you know, not be there to go to the parent-teacher conference, or they are too busy to participate in, you know, whatever. Everybody's too busy. That's the excuse for everything, but it is sacrificing and making choices. So kudos to you on that one, because that's a tough one for parents to grasp. But as far as, you know, the issue of the disciplining or whatever, you're right. I definitely have a stance that, you know, thank goodness I've never been in a situation where I felt that I've had to use physical punishment with my kids. Not that I haven't slipped up a couple times and let my own, you know, anger get away with me, but that's not my approach. My approach is definitely one of the things that you were on, Candy, is let the consequences do the screaming. Let the consequences do the disciplining. Because basically what it comes down to, you cannot control anybody but yourself. You are not, you can beat your head against the wall till tomorrow, but you are not going to control your kids. So the only way that you are going to make, you know, an example for them is by controlling your behavior. So if I'm a lunatic screaming mom in my house, do I really think that that's going to, you know, have an impact to get them to do or go down the road that I would prefer they would go to? No, not really. But I can tell you the consequences for their own actions and decisions that they make, yeah, those are more significant than any preaching that I can do, or, you know, yelling that I can do, or you know, hitting them or whatever. So that's one key point that has worked incredibly well in our house before, you know, I was married as a single mom, and then even now blending a family, incorporating that, you know, to all the kids is great. The other part is you have to be consistent. You can't, you know, set up some kind of parameter and then go back on it when your kid screws up. You can't set an expectation and then say, well, this is going to happen if you do blank. Then that happens, and then you're like, well, okay, maybe not this time. You know, if you set it out there, you got to follow through, and that's the bottom line, because what are your kids going to get from you if they can't take you at your word? So, I mean, those are two really good points that, you know, well, actually three, the part of you can't control your kids, you can only control yourself, and then the consequences are huge if you let that be a tool, you know, that you use, and then, you know, being consistent and doing what you say you're going to do.
Right. I think that is great advice. Sacrifice, as BC said, and being consistent. I'm going to pull those two out. I think consistency and sacrifice is one of the key things, because consistency, I think, is the most difficult thing. I've made a lot of sacrifices, and I think we'll make these sacrifices willingly, but when it comes to being consistent, because life isn't consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So having to flow with the ebbs and flows of life. And then your child tends to sense that things are different, even if you don't communicate this to them. And some children are extra sensitive and will tend to cut up at your most stressful times. And then those are the times where you have to be very strong in whatever situation you're going through, whether it be a divorce or whether it be writing a doctoral dissertation. I've had to finish 3 degrees as a single parent, and sometimes it seems like as soon as I get ready to write my paper or as soon as I get on phone with a study group, my daughter is violating some kind of rule, and I'm stuck between, do I stay on the phone and finish my my study group and inconvenience all 5 of my classmates? Or do I get off the phone now and I'm consistent? Well, I'm not always able to do that at the time, but I definitely know that when I get off the phone, finish doing what I'm doing, I don't let her slide and go to sleep. There are times she's watched TV where I know she's watching TV and I'm on the phone doing something that I can't stop doing. And when I get off the phone, I can hear she's turning the TV off after hours and trying to go to sleep. Well, I'm down there waking her up from her pretend nap and being, you know. So trying to be consistent is right there with sacrificing. And I don't know if Tola has anything to say about that, but I think that that kind of sums up a lot of this stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, and one of the things that stood out to me was the consistency, and I think it's very important as parents that we are consistent, you know, in whatever it is that we do and say. Like Susan rightly said, you know, we can't control our kids. We don't have control over them. To a certain extent, we can guide, we can steer them, right? But they get to the point where they're going to make their own decisions anyway, and we have absolutely no control over them whatsoever. But consistency, to me, is key. It's key to everything, whether it's discipline or whatever. You have to be consistent. You can't say one thing and then do another, because then you're sending out the wrong message. You're sending out a different message. And I think if we as parents know how strong our views are on any particular thing, you know, it'll be something that we're consistent with. So whether we're delivering sex talk or anything as such, we're consistent with it. And going back to, you know, when we were talking about the school and sex education, I believe sex education should start in the home. It should start with the parent in the home. Because if the school looks at it and says, right, at age 9, we're teaching sex education, they obviously feel that children should be taught it at age 9. But before they even get to it, we as parents should have addressed it. Because then if the school is teaching them something contrary, your child will come home to you and say, Mummy, but you said, and in school they told us, and then you're able to, like, expand even further to give them an understanding. But if it's only the school doing it, they're taking what the school has told them, and then that's it. Because in different schools it's taught differently. And unless we're actually there, you know, they'll come home with the little bits that they have picked out and held on to, and they'll tell us. And if they tell us something totally off, which is because that's the way they've understood it, we'll automatically assume, no, I don't like what the school's teaching my children when it comes to sex education. But like Susan said, you know, it's one thing to hear it, but the way they understand it could actually be totally different. But I think if they've heard it first in the home, anything else they hear outside, they can now bring it back to you, because that line of communication is open, and they can now say, but you said this and this about sex. In school, we've been taught this. But if you haven't started the sex talk and they're only hearing it from school, they're going to take what school has said. Because as far as they're concerned, going to school, they're meant to learn. So everything they're being taught, they're learning.
But can I put a little dynamic in this?
Yeah.
And working in the inner city school, right, and I think what sometimes we don't realize, right, I have a lot of students from single parents that see their mother, you know, bringing different men into the house on different occasions, just walking past, going straight to the bedroom, okay? And those are the individuals that when we sit up here, we have to look at the whole instead of part of the whole. And some of those parents sitting up here can't even teach. That, you know, they are doing wrong themselves. So you cannot do wrong, right, and teach a kid right, okay?
Right.
And that's what, because these kids all daily, on a daily basis, as I go into the school system, I hear them talk about who come into the house and who is doing the drive-bys and who is killing. Those are the individuals that sit up here that need the help. And thank God I got a good principal that sit up here, right, and would leave a car, go to the homes, pick up the kids, do the things that she needs to do to ensure, you know, those kids have a better life than they're living right now. So sometimes I think when we talk, we talk probably from the higher middle class on up, and we leave the individual in the bottom where really these kids don't have a chance unless somebody come in and interject.
Mm-hmm.
Not the parents.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why I also said that you can't say one thing and do another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of what BC has just explained, you'll find that those parents are the ones that are least likely to be able to give the sex talk.
Yes, ma'am.
Because of their
right.
lifestyle.
Right.
So there is going to be a need for sex education in the school. Because if you're a mother, you're bringing home different men constantly, and that's all your child. What sex talk are you actually going to give that child?
Right,
yeah. Well, I think one thing you said, Candy, which was really well, is you know, to have an area where that was accessible to like what BC was saying, there is going to be a percentage of young people that aren't going to get it at home, and maybe if they are, they're not going to get the straight talk at all. And so to have a place where that is accessible, I think, is, yeah, fundamental. That has to be.
Yeah, I think what I was looking at was more of a program that was maybe attached to the school where the children and the parents can attend together. Because I think that's one of the reasons why it's the main problem. Okay, we're going to have a parent-child sex workshop, and this is, you know, mandated by the school system, and you need to come. And we only have it, you know, twice a year or whatever, however you work it in. But I think I was speaking more on the level of just every day without the parent being involved. I think that still doesn't solve the communication gap between the parent and the child, because if this is the case where you have a lot of parents who are engaging in more deviant behavior than their children, then that's when you know that the problem is a lot deeper, which goes back to sex is never just about sex. We do know that in particular neighborhoods and particular socioeconomic areas where deprivation is, you know, high, where people are deprived of a lot of things, sex is often used as a substitute for love, for lack of money, not able to take vacations, you know, not able to buy things that you may think that you deserve. So sex is usually used as an immediate gratification type of tool that some people use to cope, whether it be through making money or whatever. And I think addressing these deeper issues, which all of us have talked about, that is addressing those deeper issues as opposed to, well, how can a guy get a girl pregnant? What is the sexual anatomy of this and that and the other? It's so much deeper. Or if you want to bring in the religious issue, well, just say no to sex. Just don't do it at all, because if you do, you're going to burn up and go to hell. You're going to have 20 diseases and 50 babies, and you're just not going to, you're going to separate yourself from God, and you're going to separate yourself from all of your loved ones, and all of these catastrophic things are going to happen to you. Presenting it in that way is not necessarily still addressing why is this happening.
Can I just say thank you for clarifying what your vision was for what you were talking about, Candy, because that I missed that part in that when you were explaining to have something kind of outside of school, and your idea, it sounds actually awesome. I mean, to have an adult and a teen program that would be a requirement, wow, that would be really great.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, because they have the abstinence workshops, which I'm not against. Everybody, you know, who that speaks to, I think that abstinence, throwing that option out there is important. Also, the option of if you do, this is, you know, a more of a responsible way of engaging. Or however, because we are all in different, you know, all of the kids and everybody, including the parents, are in different places. I talk to some parents, and they actually push their boys to have sex. And I've always just been so against that. You know, I guess they're just so glad that they're actually interested, that they are just proud. Oh, yeah, my boy is 15, and he has 5 girlfriends, you know. He's having sex with all of them. As a matter of fact, I let them all come over here and sleep and spend the night, you know. And that comes from a dysfunctional place as well. So I think it's so broad, and that's why I think all of us, I think the things that BC has said and that Tola has said and that you have said, Susan, that we all have a different something to offer, because we all see things differently. Susan is seeing, Susan, where are you calling from?
Seattle.
Seattle. You're
yeah.
seeing one region. BC, you're calling from where?
Oklahoma, ma'am.
You're calling from Oklahoma. He's seeing something else. Actually, I'm calling from Cleveland. I'm from North Carolina, though. But, oh, my God, when I got to Cleveland, Ohio, I'm not even going to do that. I can't even really put it into words. But that was when I kind of became really aware of it, of a certain issue, because there again, you have a city that's been deprived and stripped of their industrial money-making machines here, and you have the 60 and over crowd of Cleveland who are they're living very well. Their children did very well because they were all from a particular socioeconomic background where dad was working at the car manufacturing company making really decent money. And now that those things have been sent overseas, there's a generation here that's been completely dropped. So you see a lot of young kids wondering, well, what am I going to do when I grow up? And they've relegated it down to health care here. So if you want to make a living, then you better go into health care. So we're not even going to go with you over any types of options of who you, and what you want to do. We're just going to try to get you the heck out of high school, because they deal with a lot of violence and gangs and a lot of things that are going on here because they're idle. They don't have a lot of things going on. You know, a lot of things have been taken. So then you talk about sex. It's huge here. Teenage pregnancy is so huge, they have several programs just for their moms just to come and finish school. And, I mean, they are in there. It's just as full in those programs as it is in your traditional program. So we know sex comes out of a lot of things that need to be addressed. It's a huge, huge job. And like BC said, he's leaving the main foundation is home.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get into the home? I think Susan and Tola are doing a fabulous job with what they're doing as far as coming into people's homes. BC, I've been trying to get men to speak up and about the issue and get them involved. Men don't want to talk. I'm in the middle of trying to start up something for single moms with sons. And I keep getting the question, well, what kind of men do you have with you? Well, I can't find them.
Well,
they're busy.
No, you know what? You know, you got some, you know, I work with this organization. And we go by the single mom's house and pick up the homes and stuff and pick up these kids. We have about 60 kids that we mentor on two Saturdays a month, you know, the first and the third Saturday. The first Saturday we teach them really about reality and so on and so forth. The second Saturday is just about games and so on and so forth. But we do go into the schools to see how they're doing and so on and so forth. So what I do is challenge, you know, we have all these organizations sitting up in here, the AKAs, the this, the Masons, all these individuals.
Right.
What are they doing? And most of those are men. So what are they doing, right? We're sitting up here. They're all educated, right? They all got good jobs, some of them, right? But what are you doing to help the younger ones come on? You know, to are you reaching back to pick up somebody? Are you going out there? You know, but most of them is just about self.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing, I think. Luckily, my son is actually a very, very easy boy to raise. He does a lot of things, very independent, always been that way. He has the personality of he just wants to do right. He likes an easygoing life. He doesn't like things to be out of place. He doesn't like for to be late to school. He likes to be a little early when he goes, but this is strictly just his personality, and the only credit I take for it is that I try to keep the environment conducive to that. Now, when I had my daughter, she's very, very challenging, and she's one of those kids that before she could actually talk, she was wanting to touch the stove, and no, don't touch the stove or you'll get burned, and, you know, pop her little hands, and she's looking at that like I'm playing, and, yo, that's fun, and I'm going to touch the stove again, actually has burned her hand and still was not convinced that the stove was hot, or nor did she care. So when you have different personalities and it takes different approaches when it comes to talking about sex, you tell them the same thing, but how they react, how do we deal with the different personalities? Well, if I tell my son, the first thing I have to tell him, well, son, you know, sex makes babies, creates diseases. It's a beautiful thing, but if you're not ready, if you haven't gone to college, do you see that 15-year-old boy pushing that stroller? Do you think he wants to really have that baby and push that stroller, or do you think that he would rather be playing football and getting ready to go to the college of his choice? Oh, that just scares him to death. Whereas if I show my daughter, a young girl who is pregnant and wobbling along at 15 and can barely move with the other kids and keep up with them, look what happens when you don't really think your choices out really well. These are some of the consequences, you know. Sometimes it happens to some people. Sometimes they get away with it. But I would rather see you be able to go to the college of your choice and choose your career out of choice rather than desperation. You know, you can learn a lot by having a baby, because I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to say it all works out for the worse. A lot of my friends who had babies early in high school, same story that Tola has, it's amazing because I got married. Well, I ended up with a single mom, and I ran into a few of my friends who had their babies at 16 and 17 in high school, and I said, well, what are you up to? Oh, me and my husband, I never married the child's father, but I met a wonderful man, and he loved my child like his own, and I am a manager. She started out working at Wendy's while all of us were thinking about college. I'm a regional manager at Wendy's now. I make about $70,000 a year, and I have my house, and I have my this. Okay, well, I was divorced. And I was thinking, okay, I'm divorced. I had to give up a business. I'm in college. You know, I'm doing everything that, you know, so I'm not saying that one is better or worse. And sometimes I try to look at the positives of all of it. Learning the lessons, I think, is very important, because some of those stories have turned out very successful where young people have had their children early, and some stories where people wait until they're 45 and get married and have children, it doesn't always work out properly. But going back to the personality of each child and them having their own destiny and us not necessarily being able to control them, but sharing openly and freely like we're talking about doing here is very, very important regardless. You know, and I don't know whether any of you have personality advice when you're dealing with different personalities of what you do with an introverted child as opposed to how do you get through to more of an extroverted child who does want to touch the stove. Do you guys have any tips for our listeners on people who for people who have to deal with different personality issues in their children?
Well, I think, you know, yeah, every family, if you have more than one child, you're going to have that. That's a given. You know, you're never going to have, you know, all your children come out of the same mold, which I guess
exactly.
Is a blessing, but is also frustrating, too, because it'd be nice to have, you know, plan A with the one, first one and just know that that's the way it's going to go. But, you know, I think like my oldest, she's an introvert. So, you know, I would love to be able to sit and have conversation after conversation with her. That's not her style. And for me to push that and really try to get in her face and her business, you know, would not do anything but shut her down. So if I just make myself available and, you know, throw little tidbits out there every once in a while. And it's amazing what conversations come out of that and, you know, in dealing with her. And it's nice because we have the philosophy with her, you know what, you get the responsibility, you're gonna get the privileges until you screw up. If you screw it up, then you lose it. It's not necessarily the other way around at our house with her, because she's proven herself to be able to be responsible. So, you know, we've had a little trouble there. My younger one, he's more of the extrovert, and, you know, and then my youngest, he definitely is. So, I mean, it's challenging, and you have to just look at your children as individuals, and, you know, there's trial and error, and with everything, you know, you're not given a manual when you end up, you know, coming home with the baby from the hospital. So when you can have support, you know, from different avenues to help when you get into a situation that you're kind of throwing your hands up that you don't know what to do, you know, that's the greatest thing. And that's what I love about this kind of show and, you know, all of the stuff available on the internet. And that's what I love about, you know, what I do with my coaching is helping moms come up with solutions that fit for their family, not having to say, well, try A, B, or C and then call me back. No, it's developing something that's personal. So I think that's probably the key, is just looking at your children as individuals and seeing what their strengths are and where maybe they're a little weaker, and just trying to complete them as a whole, you know.
Right, right. Well, hold one moment. I'm going to invite a caller on. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dora. How are you?
I am absolutely fabulous, Candy.
That's good. Dora is on. Dora is a friend of mine, and we talk a lot. And I told her to call in whenever she got a chance and kind of join in on the conversation. So, Dora, what do you have to say on the matter that we're discussing here?
Oh, great subject. I'm on the other side of the world, of course. My sons are 38, 39. So I have some wisdom known on that area when it comes to children as related to the topic. One of the things that I do know from coaching and using the tools that I use to assist parents that are parenting with children regardless of the age is to treat them as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That takes the work, because that means you've got to get to know the child. And to be able to do that takes a lot of smarts, because children are very, very brilliant. And they are psychologists and psychiatrists, and they want to know how they're going to handle you. So having that in mind, when you have some information that is unique to the child, that reinforces them as individuals and empower them, that you can really get their attention, because now they know you're speaking their language. I wish I had something that I do now that I have in my coaching services. It's called the birth blueprint that I compile using astrology and numerology, and it is unique to the individual, and it's very spiritual-based. It's also very practical. I call it, when I prepare for parents, I don't necessarily do it for children. I do it for the parents so they can use it to help their children. I call it the baby book that your parent didn't have to give you. Or in my case, my parents did not have it to give me. So I find it to be very, very helpful when you're dealing with children, whether yours or someone else's, because if you're a parent, if you're an adult on this planet, you're not only parent your children. If you participate in the community, you're also a parent in other children. Because we're this one big family anyway. So the more you have about yours within your household, it provides a lot of compassion for other parents and others who are who have children, or people that don't have children. If we would take a look and see that we are all individuals collectively in this big pot that we have going here on planet Earth, it really does help a lot. My son Keith is Capricorn. He was very self-sufficient, quite unique. He has Leo, so he's very creative. Aquarius, so he could maintain his own, he could maintain his presence. He has a personality about him that was also a director and a manager, so he wanted to manage me as well. Little time for play, you know, he had a goal in mind. Even at 6 years old, he had his goal. At 9, he came to me and told me that he did not need a babysitter, that he had observed me and the babysitters, and I could keep that money because he knew what they were doing and he could do a better job. And so I just kind of questioned him and decided to, in the summertime, give him some leadway. I didn't have astrology then, just to give him some leadway that if he had convinced me that he didn't need a babysitter. So, but I did have to monitor that, and it turned out he did not need a babysitter. On the other hand, my son Kevin, who is Libra, always trying to balance things, has a Libra Mars. He makes a mess out of a lot of things. So I knew he needed more. He needed more hands-on, yet a lot of freedom. Kevin was mechanically inclined, so he was always destroying the tools in the house and leaving his father's tools out in the weather. So he was always being disciplined. I didn't have to discipline Keith. Rarely did I have to discipline Keith. He was the child that you could just leave, and when you came back, everything was in order, and you didn't have to do anything to him. And when I got in for him, and when I got into using into coaching and started doing the Divine Blueprints and took a look at my sons and how they were a lot alike, but they were also very different in the way they interacted with me and everyone else. Astrology played a big part, and now, even now, when I look at them, I use this all the time, and it doesn't lie. It is so exact. That's why I think a lot of people will not use it, because it cuts the chase. You don't have excuses anymore. And it just can take years off you trying to figure something out, how to approach someone and what's the best method, and even yourself. So I highly recommend it for people that are parenting to get your child's blueprint done. If you don't have it done, there are a lot of other things that assist. I'm familiar with quite a few of them, and they all work together. And this one here is, I would say, the top of the line, because this takes the guesswork out of it. You're looking from a spiritual as well as a practical point of view when you're dealing with that child's choices, because children choose parents. Before we're born, we're choosing. We choose where we want to be born. We choose when we want to be born. It's up for grabs whether or not that parent is going to do what they say they're going to do, and that is to navigate your spiritual development that is going to enhance who you are as a personality. So having this kind of information where the child was truly making a choice can really enhance the relationship between the parents. You can begin to enjoy it, because you're not trying to put your agenda off on them. You're more or less just what they say. As a woman told me once, a parent is a person on rent. You know, this child has rented you for a little while, and then you at some point you got to get off. You don't want to stay that type parent to the child their whole life experience. So this is a good tool to help us to navigate, because you're really looking at what the child chose. And you can get out of your head and stop trying to figure them out. And then you can just manage them or support them and guide them. It's what really a parent is about. It's about that guidance that you offer protection. And there are a lot of things that we offer our children. But usually the most important thing that the child needs, are you going to deal with who I really am? Are you going to deal with who society say I should be? So having this kind of information really does offer an added support, along with a lot of other wonderful things that coaches that do with specifically coach around children and help the parents with those. I just think it all works together, and I'm glad that there is so many different modalities mm-hmm. available that were not available when I was parenting. Of course, I don't have as much junk to deal with either when I was parenting.
Right.
Okay, so it's a lot there, because we've created these times, and children need all the assistance they can get from adults from people that really see them as adults. Some people don't see themselves as adults when they deal with children. But a child needs to know that you are an adult when you deal with me. You need to play with me like you're an adult. Don't play with me like you're my best friend or my little buddy. I need you to play with me, but act like you got some sense, because they are watching and they will give it back to you if you're paying attention to them. I think they're great teachers. Children are great teachers, and they'll teach you how to treat them if you let them show you.
Exactly. When you're looking at this from a holistic perspective, which is, I think, the point I was trying to drive home, a lot of it is hands-on, but a lot of it is vibration. What are you feeling? What is your child trying to tell you? Because the aspects, which is what we're talking about, are manifesting so many other things. So when you see 20 kids in a school out of control sexually, it may be 20 different reasons as to why they're doing these things. And normally, I found it particularly cruel when they took arts and they took physical education, the level of physical education that they had. Physical education has been relegated now to maybe twice a week, whereas every day you know your child is going to kind of run around at least for a couple of hours, including recess and things like that. So when you're putting the cap on the physical release that children need, and you're putting the cap on the artistic release that kids need, and then you're not really tuning in spiritually, that the cap is on that. And then now you just have a whole bunch of people running around trying to find these 10 magical guidelines as to how we're going to deal with this problem. I think that creates a bigger problem in a lot of cases, which is why, again, I chose people to be on here like Susan that deals individually, that does parenting coaching, and Dora that does the spiritual element, and Tola's very involved in her community, and she really has a big hands-on type project thing that she does. I don't know where she gets all the energy. I want to talk to her a little bit more, but she has the energy that I hope to have one day, because when I look on her website, she's just always dealing with lots of kids, and her kids always around her all the time. And I approach things from a different standpoint. I'm not really a kid person, so to speak. I care about kids, and I'm a bear for anybody that is trying to hurt a kid. I lay down my life for a kid, but it takes a special person to want to be around kids all the time, and to be able to draw energy from children. I think my limit to drawing energy from kids is maybe about 2 hours at a time, and I'm like, I'm exhausted. So I just wanted Tola to know that I notice how energized she is from interacting with kids in the community and the projects and the things that she does. And Susan has these things, these certifications that I've never heard of, Susan, and I thought they were extremely, extremely interesting. And then I'm going to have you all on at different times talking about different things, but for this sex thing, I wanted as many perspectives as I could get, because you never can have enough, because there's so many dimensions to this. Dora is speaking of a birth blueprint, which I'm going to just say it's a spiritual personality kind of thing. It's definitely not like your commercial astrology or anything like that a lot of people are so turned off about. It has nothing to do with entertainment at all, because I was curious about it, and when she sent me my children's blueprint, I looked at it and I said, you know, this is something I could have saved money on when it comes to therapy and it comes to counseling sessions and parent-teacher conferences and you're trying to figure, you know, certain things out. It's not a be-all, end-all, but it was a great assist to kind of help me see, because when we can't, when there's certain things as parents that we don't see or can't necessarily figure out, or when it's just that child's destiny to do certain things, go certain places, or be whoever it is that they are, sometimes we kind of get in that little controlling mode because we can't really actually see what's going on. And when it comes to sex conversations, so many other things come up, personality. Some children are not thinking about sex until they are 15, and some kids are thinking about sex at 5. You know, some kids think making love consists of just two people making out and kissing and hugging. They have no idea that penetration is involved and the anatomy and how it works and anything like that. And that's as far as it goes in their mind. And some kids know more about it than adults do. And I think that to have you all on here giving your advice is enlightening for a lot of listeners. And we only have about 14 minutes remaining, and I want to go to each of you, including BC and then the other caller that was on here, if she's still on here, and ask you, what is one question that you ask your kids to open up the conversation of sex? Because we're going to go to our kids and not wait for our kids to necessarily come to us every now and then. And whenever your kids come to you, of course, you tell them whatever it is they want to know. But if there are parents listening that haven't gone to their kids yet about the sex issue, what's the one question, Susan, that you would start out open up a conversation with?
Well, I'm pretty practical and results oriented, so I don't pussyfoot around. So when I decide it's the right time to have a conversation, basically I open up and I say, you know what, we're going to have this conversation, but why don't you tell me what you already know, and then we can go from there. And I would say about 50% of the time with each of the kids, you know, they'll offer up something, but it gives me an idea of where they're at or maybe where they've gotten the information that they've gotten already. You know, so it's just a good starting point, and then they know, you know, they can't, you know, just kind of blow it off and I'm just going to let up and go. I mean, I've kind of prefaced it by saying, you know, we're going to have this conversation, but you know what, why don't you let me know kind of where you're at, what you've heard and what you know, and then I'll tell you what I know.
Okay, very good. Next.
For me, I think one thing that, because my kids, they vary in ages, and the ages are actually quite different, because I've got a 22-year-old and then it goes down to a 15-year-old. And then it's mm-hmm. a six-year-old, and so the gaps are quiet. But I found with my oldest son, the first thing I ask them is, what age do you feel you'll be ready to start dating? You know, because mm-hmm. before the sex has to happen, they have to meet someone and they have to date. And I ask them, and I let them know my views on dating.
Okay.
You know, because I always say to them, I think you should try and get education out of the way, because I think it's very hard as a youngster to try and juggle education and a relationship, especially when you have the ups and downs.
So I ask them,
what age do you feel you're old enough to start dating?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be honest and open. You know, one might say, well, I think I'm ready. If you're talking about dating as in going to the movies and things like that, I think I'm ready. You know, one might say, well, I think by the time I'm in college,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then based on that, I know that, right, okay, then when you start having a relationship, what are the type of things that you expect to be doing to the girl? You're not just going to go to the cinema and just watch it and then bye, see ya. you know, what are the kind of things that you would expect to be doing? You know, and I'll start asking, would you expect to be kissing? Would you? And then from there, we'll just go into it.
Okay. That's a good way to go, too. Okay. Dora, do you have a particular question that you would pose to open up a sex topic with a young person?
Well, since I'm big on observation initially, after I've observed the child, and I guess the age would have a lot to do with it and what I think that they are can handle, I would approach them probably differently. It would be differently depending on the child. I'm good on observing a child as to how I would frame a question.
Mm-hmm.
If I have not had an opportunity, if it's one of mine, I probably would know how to observe. I mean, pose a question. With my son Keith, I would have to come to him like he already has the answer, because that's
uh-huh.
how he is. You know, he's when we had doing this back in the day when I was approaching him about sex, he observing him. I said, would you like to have something to read? He said, yes. That's how we handle it. When I approached Kevin, because his personality is unique to Kevin, his father, I'm going back on experience with my son, his father approached him because they were so alike in personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're boys. They were boys, so that made a little different how they wanted to interact with me during that time. And you've got to remember the time that I'm parenting them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I would still observe the child, and if they're the take charge, got it going on, they're the manager, they're the director, I would take all that into consideration, and we probably have more of a discussion where we would kind of chat and get into the flow of it. If it was a child that I really thought needed to have that, like I was dealing with an Aries child, or Scorpio,
mm-hmm.
they usually start sex very early.
Mm-hmm.
They're curious about it. They may not want to act in it, but they're very, very curious. Their anatomy wakes up very early.
Mm-hmm.
There's an urgency with them in the lower chakras. So I would observe that. I would have to. I think observation is a big key for me. And in
so
my
observation,
mm-hmm.
observing the child.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
It wouldn't be mm-hmm. so much about me; it would be about them.
Right.
What they have shown me, I would observe them and then approach them from a discussion point of view, or do I just come out and ask you, "What do you know? Do you want to discuss it? Have you read anything?" So much children are exposed to now that they were not available when I was parenting my sons. Hands-on, or it's just a lot now, and children have more information than we think they have about sex, and it's good information that they have, too. A lot of it is not trashy. Children are brilliant. They're very brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
They're smarter than we are, really, if we would just take the time and listen to them. They'll tell us how
mm-hmm.
to ask them questions and pose different things to us. I would go the observation route.
Okay.
First.
And what about you, BC? Do you have any particular way that worked for you?
You know, like I said, I work for the public school system. I think sometimes, you know, this is 2009. And to be truthful with you, our kids, you know, yeah, we have differences. But if you look back, right, and if you look back, you will see that kids at a young age, right, and I'm going to be not graphic, but I'll be respectful, they've been molested. You have kids right now in kindergarten, right, touching each other in different
right.
places. So
exactly.
We cannot wait until they get to junior high school. We cannot wait till they get to high school, right, to sit up
mm-hmm.
here and bring that forth. You see what I'm saying? Because then we're defeating
right.
the purpose, right? Because I'm
mm-hmm.
sitting up, I'm working in a system where, and I've seen it in Detroit. I've lived in Detroit, in California, where teachers have to bring in parents because kids are touching individuals in the wrong places. So it's not a wait till this kid turn 15 and 16, right? They, you you know, we are, these kids are so advanced right now because look what was happening with kids in the churches and different things like that. And they didn't
right.
know. You see what I'm saying?
So if,
what,
if a parent is listening and they haven't had the nerve, because I definitely know what you mean about them touching each other and being molested and things like that, have had those situations to deal with, which that is in itself self-prompts the definite conversation along with some counseling and whatever else is needed. But if there's a parent listening who has not approached their 11-year-old, their 12-year-old yet about sex, because believe it or not, they're still out there. In your experience, what would you suggest that, how do you suggest that they open it up? Are you having sex? What are you feeling? How would you go about doing that?
So, man, you know, what I usually, you know, with my kids, start back in elementary school, right?
Okay.
Because, you know, as a single parent, I had to bathe my daughter, I had to bathe my son because they were of that age, you know, and so
on.
And
what question did you ask them?
You know, anybody touched you, right?
Okay.
And so on and so forth. Do you know, and, you know, sometimes when my kid, my son especially, reaches a certain age, you know, he came to me because we have that open, you know, dad, you know, why I'm feeling this way and so on and so forth, because we were just open. And like I said, when my daughter turned of age, she was comfortable enough to come to me and say, Dad, guess what, I'm bleeding, you know.
Right.
And so I had to take act and sit down and talk to her. I didn't send her to my mother yet. I didn't send her to her aunts and all that good stuff. We spoke, you know, and that's why I'm saying this is not a conversation just for women. You know, it's for also men, so we can close the gap and you know, do for our kids, you know, what we really need to do as parents, both men and women.
Okay, now I have 5 suggestions here before we only have 4 minutes that I'm going to share with those who are listening. If they have difficulty talking about sex, you can ask them, what do you know, and I'll tell you what I know, which I really like, because you can do that at any age. You can say at 3, what do you know about sex? And then I'll tell you what I know. I mean, that's really a very good way of opening up. What age do you feel like you're ready to start dating, and what do you expect to do on that date? Okay, that's a very good question, because my daughter was talking about dating at 5. Oh, and I get a boyfriend. Okay, well, what do you think you're going to do with that boyfriend? That's a very good question. Dora says, observe, and then go from there. And I say, my mom started talking with me about sex when she told me I was too big to sit on men's laps. I remember when I was a little girl, I was the baby of the family. Everybody wanted to pick me up and put them on their lap. And I remember a particular age came around, and she kind of picked me up and said, come over here with me. And I remember saying, well, what's the problem? And ever since then, she kind of started letting me know. And I was maybe about 4. I was still young, or so I thought. But I remember I couldn't sit on men's laps anymore after that, unless it was my dad. And even if it was my dad, because she told me of all of the anatomy and the things that can happen, this is how you need to do, and this is what you need to do. You need to keep your legs, and you, this is why, you know. So we started sex talk when I was about 4 years old, talking about how I'm supposed to carry myself in front of grown men. So I think those are 5 things that I'm hoping that everybody who was listening got from the show. If they didn't get anything else, these are some openers that you can use with your kids from a very young age. And you all were brilliant. I'm so glad to have BC on as an unexpected guest. And male talking about sex and children. I think that is a very great surprise. I'm glad Dora came on, and Susan and Tola, thank you guys so much for answering my calls, for you guys to come and speak with me. I'm hoping that this is the beginning, not the end, of a interactive relationship, and I will be calling all of you back on. And BC, keep listening, and if you can, BC, send me an email so I can on Blog Talk, so I can kind of keep up with what you're doing. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, and we're going to close the show. And I thank you guys for showing up. And this
You're
is
welcome.
It.
Thank you, Candy. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys, for your wisdom. And until next time, like I tell everybody, reconstruct the world by reconstructing your minds. That's my motto. See you guys later.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Okay. I thought that was just a wonderful, wonderful show. And I hope, again, that all of you all who were listening were able to get some very good ideas about how to open up sex talk with your kids. I was trying to keep the conversation to a point where it fit as many people as possible for all age ranges, where it was comfortable information, where you can go back and share with your kids. And hopefully you'll tune in on our next show. I'll keep you guys posted. Have a good day.